Welcome. You're listening to Between Our Pages, a Premier's Reading Challenge WA podcast. This episode was recorded on Whadjuk Noongar land. We acknowledge the traditional custodians and pay respects to their elders past, present and emerging. My name is Fiona Bartholomaeus and we're back for 2024, exploring more of the wonderful world of books and reading right here in WA. Today we're chatting with award-winning children's author Norman Jorgensen about his pirate adventure book, The Wrecker's Revenge. Let's go. The Wrecker's Revenge is a thrilling story of danger and adventure as it follows Red Reed as he and the crew of the Black Dragon hunt down a great lost treasure. It's a recent publication from award-winning children's author Norman Jorgensen and is the sequel to The Smuggler's Curse. Norman, thanks so much for joining me.
Oh, it's absolute pleasure, Fiona.
So you fell in love with reading and books at a young age. What was it about reading that grabbed your attention and made you want to be a writer?
I think it was I discovered books in grade one, of course, but they're actually particularly boring because they're readers. But by the time I got to grade two, I found Enid Blyton. My town librarian suggested to my dad I might like Enid Blyton, and I absolutely loved it. They were funny. They were funny and they were adventurous, and they took place in England, which I hardly even heard of at that age. And I just wanted to be a Secret Seven more than anything in the world, and I was absolutely hooked. And then as I got a bit older, I realised I wasn't any good at sport. And I lived in Narrogin, a country town. And if you don't do sport in a country town, then you might as well lock yourself in your room forever. But it didn't bother me one little bit because I always had a book with me. I became really friendly with the town librarian, and on my way home from school every day I would drop in and she'd started to save all the best books for me.
So. Oh, awesome. Yeah, great relationship to have. Mm. And yeah. I read that you had a story of yours read on radio when you were younger on ABC. Did that help much with the passion of writing?
It sure did. There's a program called the Argonauts Club, and it was on ABC radio every afternoon at 5 o'clock. And it was before television. So every kid in Australia listened to this, and it was an hour, and they put on poems and stories and special songs just for kids, and the announcers almost like kids, but they weren't. And you could send in stories and poems. And I sent in a story about my rotten school and my rotten teacher and my rotten headmaster. And it got read on 6 weeks later, got read out on the radio on the 5 o'clock in the afternoon. I was beside myself with happiness and pride. And I think then I thought, I'm going to be a writer and I'm going to get rich and I'm going to buy a sports car. And I was about nine.
And since then you've written quite a number of books, and the most recent one was The Wrecker's Revenge. Can you tell us a bit about that book?
Sure. One of the joys of being a children's book writer in WA is you get invited to schools for book week, and I scored Cocos Island. And so my wife and I went to Cocos Island, had a week of working at the school, and then we stayed on for another week because it's Cocos Island. It's like tropical paradise. And one day I was just sitting on the beach and there's a little island off the beach where we were, and the place is deserted. And I thought, I wonder what it would be like to be shipwrecked here. Would it be tropical and perfect, or would you starve to death, or would you die? Or and what if people were trying to come after you? And so I started answering those questions, and that led me to writing The Wrecker's Revenge. It's about a shipwreck. These guys go looking for the lost gold of William Dampier, and on the way they're being chased by the other people that want the lost gold of William Dampier. It's worth about $50 million in today's money. It does exist. And they get shipwrecked and have to make the most of it. I think it was a bit inspired by Swiss Family Robinson too. Do you know that?
I do not.
That was an old book set in the 1800s. But Walt Disney made a movie of it when I was a kid, and it was fantastic, absolutely. And they build a tree house. They have all the amenities that you can make on a tropical island, but then the pirates come to try and they have to fight the pirates off.
So was it very much that Cocos Island trip that blended the Australian landscape and Australian places with the pirate genre?
Landscape, it's really important in my books, and part of the reason is I go to places and I sit under a tree and wait for imaginary characters to arrive, and then I just describe it. But I have to describe the landscape first, and I think all Australian writers, the landscape's an extra character in their books.
I feel like when we think about pirate genres, we don't really think about Australia being a great setting for those kinds of books. But it's perfect once you actually like sit down and read the books. It absolutely makes sense.
Mm. When I wrote the Smuggler's Curse, the first in the series, I originally set it in England. It was a pirate story set, a smuggler story set in England. And my editor at Fremantle Press, Kate Sutherland, said to me, "Why don't you move it to Australia? Yeah, you know more about Australian history than most people I know." And I said, "I couldn't do that." She said, "No, no, all you've got to do, move it to Broome, the wildest place on earth," and back in 1900s. So I shifted to Broome, said, "All you've got to do is change the weather and the landscape."
And there you go.
Yeah, 2 years later.
So for those who pick up your book, Wreckers Revenge, what do you hope they take away from it at the end?
Sense of excitement, sense of freedom. I feel sorry for a lot of modern kids. They don't have any freedom whatsoever. They get driven to school, they get driven home, they get taken to music lessons, they get taken to sport lessons. Their whole lives are controlled. And when I was a kid and the generations before me, that we were left alone. Our parents expected us to die, I think. We went out when the sun came up and we came home when it got dark, unless you hurt yourself or you got really, really hungry. And so there's a sense of freedom that the kids have in my stories. In Jack's Island, which is set on rottenness in World War II, and a lot of kids have studied it in school, in huge numbers. And that's the overwhelming sense that I get from them, is they want to be like the two kids who can do whatever they like. And they build canoes and go out into the ocean. And can you imagine any parents now letting their kids build a canoe
from out of tin? Some branches.
Yeah, and go out into the middle of Thompson Bay with his sharks.
And speaking of Jack's Island, it's very recently been re-released. Can you tell us a bit more about that process of re-releasing a book?
It doesn't have a lot to do with me. The publishing company decided that, well, it's 15 years old, 2008 that I wrote it. And as I said, kids in grade 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 have been studying it. Mm. So every year they sell a whole load for the whole new generation moving to school. And I think they had a new cover designer at Fremantle Press, Rebecca Mills, and they got her to give it a go, and I love it. She's read the book closely and put all the elements on the cover and made it dramatic. It stands out on the shelves.
How does it feel for you for one of your books that's very, very popular being even more put back into the spotlight?
I had a rejection just before, so a new one. So it came along at the perfect minute. I'm feeling quite low. You know, put a year's worth of effort into a book and it got rejected. And so when Kate decided she was going to redo it and give it a whole new lease of life, and it gave me a huge boost as well, because my name's out there. I'm getting more bookings for Book Week and school talks. And yeah, so I did that without having to do any extra work. So that was cool.
One of the things I love about your books, and I wish I grew up with a bit more Australian settings in books, how important is it for you to write books that either feature or have reference to Australian or Western Australian locations?
I made a point with my very first book that was called Ash of the Outback. It was a long time ago, set in Outback Australia, about a pilot flying around the Outback. I made a point that all my books will be set in Australia, without exception, because when I was growing up, you know, I said I discovered Enid Blyton. They were set in Devon and Cornwall, which I'd never been to. Every other book I got from the town library was set in England or America. There was hardly any Australian books back then. And so I don't want that to happen to my readers. I'm going to always set them in Australia or about Australians. After 10 books, I decided I'd set The Smuggler's Curse in England, and my editor maybe changed it anyhow. So, of all of them, 16, I think, they're all Australian.
Now you're stuck into Australia. You can't leave.
No. And I love Australian history, so it's not hard for me to find a time or a place, a story, a location.
So your books vary quite differently in topics. Why is it important for children and students to have books in such a wide variety?
It wasn't deliberate in my case. What I did each time is try and write something I'd never done before. So first, very main one was Flanders Field, which is a picture book set in World War One. Then I wrote Call of the Osprey, which is about a boy and his granddad building a boat in Fremantle, completely opposite sort of story. Jack's Island came along. That was about my dad growing up on Rottnest. The Smuggler's Curse and the Wreckers of Revenge are just straight out adventures, because I wanted to have fun writing them and exploring, and which I did. Yeah, so it's about me having fun mostly. Wasn't set out to any pattern or preconceived idea what I'm going to write about.
And a couple of your books, you've worked with local illustrators to create it.
God, I hate illustrators. Just kidding, I don't at all. James Foley, who did The Last Viking, is one of my best friends.
He's a lovely guy as well. We've had him on the podcast. It's very great to chat to him.
Yeah, he's great, isn't he?
How do you approach writing for books that will be accompanied by illustration as opposed to Jack's Island and The Smuggler's Curse, which is just purely text?
Yeah, it's tough doing picture books, much harder than writing novels because the industry standard's about it's 32 pages, 600 words. And if you go above that, your text starts to overtake the illustrations, okay, which are quite important. But then also your text gets cut because when the illustrator, if I said you were wearing a pink top and the illustrator draws you wearing a pink top, you don't need to say it. It's obvious.
Yep.
Yeah, so the book is told using the words and the pictures, not the words or the pictures.
Finding the balance between.
Yes, it is, absolutely. Yeah. And, yeah, you write a fabulous manuscript, you think, and then you sit down and you're losing half of it just because it gets turned into pictures.
Yeah. Do you ever have to, when you have written books that are illustrated, do you have to then go back to the text and add some more in there?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's flowing all the time because you never know what the illustrator's going to do next. And I had one illustrator, she just wouldn't draw stuff. He didn't like it. And so then I had to replace that with my words, of course. Yeah.
And now you mentioned before that you spend a lot of time at schools during book weeks.
Yeah.
How is it for you to visit the students and spread the word of local writing to them?
I love it because what I also do is take along current manuscripts, things I'm working on, and I'll run them past the kids and see what they think.
Oh, really?
And you know, so I've got a new one, new manuscript at the moment called Secret Agent School, about a kid who gets selected to go to secret agent school. And I've been reading chapters to the kids and they I think it might be some of the best stuff I've ever done because they sit there in absolute silence.
I was going to ask, are they harsh critics or?
No, they tend to be kind and gets them out of maths or something for an hour while I'm here, doesn't it? So I think they appreciate that.
Why do you think it's important that students are able to connect with local writers like yourself?
When I first read a book set in Perth on the Swan River and I was about 12, it was a revelation to me that it could actually happen. Because I'd never seen a film set in West Australia. All my books I read were England or American. And there was one, and I could identify the places the writer was talking about. And so I tried to do that. So, yeah, I write for a 12-year-old living in middle of Perth.
And I must admit, it always is nice reading a book or watching a movie and hearing them reference very local things and going, I went there the other week.
Yeah, that's great. Book set in Margaret. Oh, I know where they are. I walk down that road. Yeah, so I think I want the kids to have an experience that I didn't have reading. And I still got hooked on reading, but I think having your local references, I think it should be important to you.
Now, do you have any more books in the works now that you've re-released Jack's Island, Wreckers Revenge came out a few years ago? Anything else on the cards coming up soon?
This is the Secret Agent School, which I talked about. Mm-hmm. I've written a sequel to The Wreckers Revenge. It's set in China. Starts in Western Australia, but they go to China for an adventure. I'm working on the sequel to Jack's Island, set a year later. And the two boys who lived on the island in World War II, war's over, and they go back to the island on a camping trip. And the place is derelict. There's no one left. But they still have loads of adventures.
So. Sounds like you've got lots in the works there.
Yeah. Just got to get them polished up to a level where the kids want to read them.
Now, the challenge has yet to start for 2024, but it's always important to keep reading. How important has reading been in your life?
It's the most important thing of all. I've never once in my whole life been bored. I always carry a book with me. And sometimes the books aren't that great, but they're certainly better than staring at the wall, which, you know, if you're stuck on an aeroplane or waiting in a doctor's surgery or something like that, that can go on forever. So I think reading is the most wonderful thing that in my life. And I pity kids, anyone who doesn't enjoy it, who doesn't like it, just won't do it. For me, it was a bit easier because I didn't have all the distractions that kids have now. We didn't have TV, as I said. There was no computer games. Had the radio, which I listened to, but not too much. And we're outside a lot. So there wasn't, reading wasn't being competing with all of the other distractions kids have now. But I feel sad for anyone who hasn't got the reading bug. Yeah.
Now, before we let you go, I'm going to ask you a couple of rapid fire questions.
Okay.
I just want the first answer that pops into your head.
Yep.
What is your favourite book?
Treasure Island.
What are you reading at the moment?
David Mitchell's David Mitchell's written a book about the kings and queens of England.
Non-fiction or fiction?
Lately it's been non-fiction, a lot of history.
Favourite genre?
History. Definitely history. and I like American history as well, surprisingly. I like American Civil War. I'm a little cowboy at heart, so.
And in the spirit of the Premier's Reading Challenge, how many books do you hope to read in 2024?
Oh, one a week would be good, wouldn't it? 50?
I like that. Good solid number.
My wife's worse. She reads about one a day, so she's probably going to get about 300.
That is incredible, and I really hope she does reach 300 this year. You've been listening to Between Our Pages, a Premier's Reading Challenge WA podcast. Thanks to our guest Norman Jorgensen for joining me on this episode. Stay tuned to your favourite podcast app for future episodes, or keep an eye out on the Department of Education Facebook page. Thanks for listening. Happy reading. We'll see you next time.